At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello and welcome back to What in the World is Dyscalculia, the podcast that is all about the specific learning disorder in math. And I am your host, Dr. Honora Wall, and I'm joined today by Katie Walker. And you've probably seen us do a couple of these already, but we just keep coming up with more things that we want to talk about to get more information about dyscalculia out to families, to educators, and to people who have the math learning disability. And so real quick, Katie, before we even get started, who are you? How can people find you? What do you do?
Awesome. Thanks so much, Dr. Wall. Again, Katie Walker. I am the CEO and founder of Dyscalculia Tutoring. You can find us online at dyscalculiatutoring.com. We provide high quality, specialized one-on-one math intervention for students with dyscalculia and other learning related learning challenges like dyslexia and dysgraphia and other learning challenges. So excited to be here again and have another conversation about this very important topic.
Yeah, I know. Now I want to make another note because you're right. Dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyspraxia, who nobody talks about, ADHD, autism, executive function issues, all of those fall under that neurodivergent umbrella and you get so much bleed through. So we'll have to talk about those commonalities in a future episode. But today, what I really wanted us to talk about is the top four challenges we see for students with dyscalculia in those upper level arenas. So really entering into high school, surviving high school, hopefully getting into college, and what makes people not always choose that as their path, even if it might be the right path for them. So I wanted to start with this one because I do work a lot with older students in high school, college, or adults in the workplace. And I think that we have a lot of similar challenges that we do in earlier grades, but they come up in different ways. The big one that I have a really hard time getting teachers to accept, kind of embrace, is the calculator as a tool for help. There's still some teachers, even in upper level math classes, who don't allow a calculator or don't allow them during assessments, which would be like not letting me wear my readers and expecting me to read. And also understanding that those, just because you say, okay, now you get to use a calculator, so here you go, don't ask me another question. Students come in to high school and they've been told the calculator is lava, you're not allowed to touch it. So they don't know what to do with it. They don't always remember to bring it to class. They have no idea what half the buttons are for, and they don't have that number sense to know whether or not they're probably getting the right answer. And I think that's very frustrating for educators in those upper grades because, you know, there's an expectation of those basic facts and now we can move on to another conversation. But that disconnect means the student's not getting the help that would allow them to be successful. What do you see with your older students?
Yeah, I definitely see the same with the calculator, and different calculators work differently. Some of them, you know, you hit the 25 and then the square root button. Some of them you hit the square root button and then the 25. Some of them are easier to use with fractions and decimals, other ones. And so knowing your calculator, I said, otherwise it's a $100 paperweight. Like we need to actually learn how to use it. And I was, when I taught high school, I was one of the teachers that would actually instruct all of my students on how to do the things with the calculator that we made them purchase. And there's so many things that it can do that even, regular ed students don't learn how to do. And it's like, well, no, it can do all the fraction arithmetic that you don't remember from fourth grade. It can do it all. So, I think the other piece that I see, related to that as a former high school teacher is, the education system for upper level math educators doesn't actually teach us how to teach those foundational numeracy skills. So you've got to, so you're, say you're a geometry teacher or an algebra two teacher, and you have this kid in front of you who has a calculator accommodation. They're struggling with their number sense. They don't know how to use the calculator, and you're noticing they don't know how to do fractions. And then you, trying to be helpful, are going to, force them to do a whole bunch of practice. Oh, well, you just multiply the numerator and the denominator, and you do the butterfly method, and you do keep, change, flip. And we teach all these like nonsense rote memorization things, thinking that that's going to solve the problem. And it's just like, if that was going to solve the problem, that would have solved the problem years ago. And so I think it's hard. I feel for the high school teachers, being a former high school teacher myself, but it's definitely a challenge because, like I said, we don't get taught that information of how we learn how to teach function analysis, graphing, higher level algebraic manipulations, right? Like, but we don't necessarily know how to actually instruct those like prior skills that they should have maybe gotten in upper elementary math, but maybe didn't.
Right. And I think a lot of teachers feel
So
like
yeah, I
that's not
definitely
their role.
see that with my students.
What are some other things that come pretty frequently with your students who are older?
I definitely see the cumulative effect of being a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, that the students are having by the time, they come to me, I'll ask them the question of when was the last time you felt good in math or felt successful at math? And then you just see them kind of like, ooh, years ago, right? And so they've had many, many years of feeling bad about themselves, of not being able to understand the material, of feeling like they're not a math person. And so that negative failure cycle is like in full effect by the time they're in high school, unless they've gotten that right help like much earlier on. If you didn't catch our early elementary episode about this, like go back and check that out, because that'll also kind of explain some of what might have happened to this kid who's now a 10th grader or a 9th grader or whatever, at that upper in the high school context. And yeah, I don't know if you see that with your older students or even adults, that like confidence tr educational trauma piece.
I absolutely do. I was working with an adult recently who's looking to go back into college. So we've been working on getting ready for placement tests and things like that. And we had a session. It was pretty intense with a lot of numeracy pieces. And at the end, I said, okay, well, how did that feel today? How did that go? And he said, well, no one is crying. So that's pretty good. That's a first. So, okay, we have to talk about that piece. And if you're a high school teacher or educator, walk down the hall to the person who's teaching AP Psych and say, talk to me about learned helplessness, because they will be able to really give you some good insight into what's going on with your students who have had so many years, like you said, of this does not work for me. I'm not going to be successful. I know exactly what's going to happen if I try to answer a question in class. So of course they're disengaged, and now we're really not getting anywhere. And for some of our students, it does lead into developing anxiety disorders, depressive disorders. There's a lot of trauma-responsive teaching that will go a long way to helping students with dyscalculia of any age.
I always use the analogy of learning to juggle. If I want to learn to juggle, I need two things. I need to believe myself that I can learn how to juggle, and I need someone who knows how to juggle who believes that I can learn how to juggle. And I need both of those things, right? I can't, it's not enough and sometimes like I might have to borrow my teacher's belief in me for a little while I don't believe in myself enough. And that's often what I see for my older students, that they have to kind of borrow my belief in them for a little while until I can kind of prove to them that they actually can have some success and can learn math. But if you walked up to a random person on the street, they probably can't juggle, and they probably aren't, and there's a lot of math anxiety kind of culturally in the United States. And so, that like self-belief for a student like the ones we work with is pretty negative. And so we need them to borrow ours for a little bit while we kind of get them to the point of being willing to try again. Because if you aren't willing to engage, which I totally get, right? You've had all these negative experiences and now you're going to disengage because why would I want to do math? I'm just going to feel badly about myself. But that willingness to try is absolutely necessary to learn. And so we've got to kind of get through that piece, and that those mental health effects are very serious. And I agree with Dr. Wall. Trauma-informed approaches can go a long way here for our students.
They definitely can. And that kind of leads well into what I think is a third really huge challenge for this group. And this is where, a lot of people listening may or may not be touchy-feely. They don't want to deal with trauma-responsive teaching. Okay, that is perfectly fine. Let me talk to you about the economic impact, because now at these higher levels, we're seeing students who homeschool because they're not successful in the system. They're not going to do it anymore. That puts a lot of pressure on the family. That's an economic impact to homeschool. It's really a challenge for a lot of families. We also have schools losing money because they're losing kids in seats. We also have students dropping out. And the economic effects of not completing your high school education are huge and well researched. We know where that leads to a lifetime of lower economic earnings for a person. We have a lot of people who might get through high school and thank you very much, they are done. So they're not going on to college, or they're not going on to the right college for them because they're limiting their own options, or they're limited by other outside barriers, or they're not finishing college. So now we have a very large population of people who, for the challenges we've talked about, which can all be overcome, are now facing less employment, underemployment from where they should be, lower lifetime earnings. They're not responsible for their family finances. They're not making the kind of financial literacy choices that we know improve quality of life. That also means they're not in the right tax bracket for our communities to be healthy. So we have a lot of very serious economic indicators that come from older students with dyscalculia not getting the right kind of help.
Yeah, this is a it's a definitely an interesting topic, because I think it shifts drastically from the like, oh, I have this 8-year-old who doesn't know how to do three digit by two digit addition or whatever it is that they're working on and they're struggling with. Now we're talking about adults, right? We've shifted. And so it's a totally different kind of context, and it goes from that, like, oh, I'm worried about whether they know their arithmetic, to how are they going to function
That's
in
right.
society? And even I think about trades. I was a my family comes were like higher education. My grandpa was a professor, so like for me and my background, it was always about go to college, go to college, go to college. But as I've kind of been a teacher for a long time and experienced life, I recognize that like college isn't for everybody. I don't want to make it so you can't go to college. Like, you absolutely, I want to make it so if that's what you want to do, that's your that you have that door open for you. But even a trade, right? Like, if you are going to go into a trade, if you want to ever work for yourself and not just work for someone else, right? Which is where the money is really to be made. If you're going to like kind of be your own plumber, right? And then that's where you're going to really make money versus working for someone else. Or if you want a union plumbing job or a union job, it's a huge amount of schooling actually to get some of those master electrician or, all those trades. And so we need students to be able to feel comfortable even going into that type of profession, not just like what Dr. Wall was talking about of college, and dropping out of high school, but we need people for the trades and the educations that they need for those to be able to be successful in those fields as well. I think it's really important to kind of draw attention to, because not everybody's going to go to college, and that's fine, but we do want people to be contributing to their own families' economics as well as our country. Depends on it.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I probably could have made more money going into a trade in the first place, and I'd be able to fix some things in my house. So I'm a huge fan of understanding trades. And yeah, there's a lot of fractions in there, but it's not every single fraction. It's only
No.
about 10 really specific fractions. So maybe if we spent some time in high school classes focusing on the kind of fractions people actually might need in their work,
Right.
then they would have a lot more
Right.
confidence in what they're
17
doing.
45ths is probably not what we need to worry about. But I think this brings me to kind of the fourth big challenge that I see, which is the kind of arbitrary and systemic barriers and boundaries that are placed on students, right? And you've kind of brought up one, which is like the we try to say we have to be able to talk about all types of, fractions for when it doesn't actually really matter. We could simplify the arithmetic and still accomplish the same content goals, which is an easy accommodation to implement in your classroom. If you're a teacher, you can just make it so the numbers are easy and nice numbers, quote unquote. But even thinking about heading into college or trade school, right out of high school. So say you made it all the way through high school, you didn't drop out, right? And you graduated high school and now you want to move on to that next step. Often there are, SAT, ACT tests they have to take, or even for test optional schools, there are often placement tests once students get to college, or they have to take some silly math class that doesn't have anything to do with their, degree. And we have all these requirements that are kind of like gatekeepers, like intentionally designed, to weed out people, and keep access. And I'm not quite clear what the like why, where that came from, but that is what they are, and they're gatekeepers for that block many of our students because they don't have the confidence to take a test. They don't have the right accommodations in place that would allow them to be successful on that test because of all of the challenges of working with the system to get extended time or a calculator on some of these tests that are very like tough to get those accommodations put through for. So yeah, I don't know. Do you have any stories or examples that might help kind of illustrate this?
I could do a whole other podcast on those. And I'll say a couple of things because you brought up great points. The gatekeeper for areas where it really doesn't need to exist. I'm not sure that an elementary art teacher needs to know how to multiply rational expressions. I'm not sure that's something that we've got to really focus on there. And so we have arenas of college majors that don't need a ton of math, or certainly certain types of math, and we're putting in things that are unnecessary. I had a student who was going to a well-known private university in South Florida and was accepted and wanted to get into the engineering program, had all of the credentials, all of the high school background, and was actively tutoring students currently in that school's engineering program. He had dyscalculia and he could not get through the placement test in order to be accepted for the engineering program. So while he was doing the work, had a track record of doing the work, and was helping other people do the work, because he couldn't get through that placement test, he was denied access into the engineering program. So we are leaving a lot of talent on the table. And one thing that my nonprofit is really starting to focus on is you were talking about having to take that one math class. Like, why and what do you do if you can't? There are a lot of people who have traumatic brain injuries, especially returning veterans from deployment, and they're having trouble finishing their college algebra class so that they can use their GI Bill to finish their degree. I find that to be very insulting to veterans, and that's something that is becoming a passion project of mine. How do we get higher ed to recognize the way that they are, quite frankly, failing people with neurodivergence and traumatic brain injuries because of outdated thinking about a required college math class? Have a required class. Absolutely, I have no problem with that. Design it properly with the right accommodations and train professors to understand TBIs and neurodivergence. And that way, that challenge is easily fixed because the system has corrected itself.
And I mean, I think about that too, of like, I see adults complaining, like, I never learned like basics of personal finance,
Yep.
how to do my taxes, how to, like, if I want to own my own business and work for myself, how do I manage the books? How do I, like, do, how do I do money, right? That could be a much more applicable one math class that a student has to take than college algebra. Like you said, when are you going to have to multiply two binomial expressions in life? Like, probably never. And if you did, you probably wouldn't be able to ask somebody else, whether
right.
it's a, you know, digital tool, like, you know, that can do a lot of this, you know, basic calculation. Or another human being that can help you out with, you know, some of those more kind of obscure things that you don't
yeah.
remember how to do. So I think it's definitely interesting to see, you know, I think it's good that the conversation is coming up and that people are talking about it, because I do feel like there's a bit of, like, catching up that needs to be done. And there's been some changes in the trends with schools, and there are test optional schools. And I think, you know, in my experience with my high school students, like, guidance counselors kind of helping them choose the right kind of school for their, for their application process. If they knew that they're not a very good test taker, or that their test is not going to be representative, like your student that you're talking about, right? This placement test, he can demonstrate proficiency in lots of different ways. And some schools, I think, are better about understanding that than others. But I think that idea that we have to jump through this hoop or open this gate or whatever analogy, metaphor that you want to use, it's a little bit, it's frustrating. And just, to me, goes back to that mental effects and trauma that we talked about as our second barrier, that, like, it's hard to be confident in yourself when then this is what you're faced with, that these arbitrary barriers and are put in place. Like, the student, his dream is to be an engineer, and I'm sure he would be an amazing engineer. And yet, because of this arbitrary thing that he can't pass because it's a time test, which, like, when in life, again, am I going to have to sit down and take a time test? He is being kept from the education he needs to go on to pursue what he wants to pursue. And so I'm with you there. I don't know what the, other than us standing on our soapbox and talking about it and having more people listen to podcasts like this, and just, and open their minds to the idea that it doesn't have to be the way that it's always been, and that there's different ways of approaching it that will allow more people to participate and move forward with what it is that they want to do and the gifts that they have to offer the world.
I think that is a great point. And my final message to people who might be in that situation is, go where you are celebrated, not where you're tolerated. And I think, with wrapping up our conversation, the top four challenges for older students, high school, college, and adults who have dyscalculia: we're still having a hard time finding the right help, but the right help is out there, and it's actually easy to do. We're seeing the long-term trauma effects, and whatever level of help you need to get, if you need professional help for that, if you just need a good teacher who's got some trauma-responsive teaching, or doing some journaling on your own, just do not ignore your mental health under any circumstances. The system is still trying to figure out what to do for neurodivergent students. It can be an exciting time for us to create some really impactful change. And as you were saying, Katie, the way we've done it does not have to be the way that we continue to do it, especially when we know it doesn't work. And let's analyze the places where the system doesn't work and just make it work. It's really not that hard. The ways to help people are not that cost prohibitive or time intensive. And if you want to know more about what that means, you can reach out to either one of us. So I'm going to kind of wrap this up, Katie, with, if they want to talk to you more about what you've mentioned today and get more information, how can they find you?
Absolutely. So again, our company is Dyscalculia Tutoring, and we are at dyscalculiatutoring.com. And you can also find our email address, our phone number on there, information to schedule a call to find out about tutoring. We do have some upper level tutoring that I do. So if you are in need of some support, you can definitely reach out there, and you can find us on social media. Same thing, Dyscalculia Tutoring on Instagram and Facebook.
Excellent. I follow you on Instagram, and I have to go find you on Facebook. And if anyone is looking for my information, I have a Facebook support group page for teachers. That's a public page. on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube, but also please reach out, especially at the DTRI.org, especially if you are in a higher ed situation, either as a student or as a professor. You want some training on how to tweak your classroom so it meets the needs of neurodivergent people. If you are a person who has suffered a TBI and you want to learn more about how to better meet the needs of that traumatic brain injury, please reach out to me. I would love to help. And just general information or other training, check out educalclearning.com. And thank you very much for listening to What in the World is Dyscalculia. Katie, thank you for being here. I'm pretty sure we'll have you on again soon.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.